Well, welcome. We're Hometown Alaska, and my name's Kathleen McCoy. I'm the host. And today we are talking musical theater because we just happen to have a great musical in our town, and we're going to have another one in the spring. So we gathered together some guests. We have John Michael Zerline. He's in the cast of Mamma Mia, and if he looks a little tired, it's because he's working very hard. He plays Bill Austin, one of the prospective dads in that production. And we also have Tori Allen from Anchorage Opera. Welcome, Tori.
Good to be here.
And he's a little farther back from producing South Pacific. It's not on your doorstep, but it will soon be on your doorstep.
Coming soon.
So we're going to talk about musical theater, both of these productions. We're going to talk about musical theater in general. We're going to talk a little bit about what's it like to go from Omaha, Nebraska to New York City, or where did you grow up, Tori B?
San Francisco Bay Area.
San Francisco to Boston to around the world as a musical theater performer. And I just also want to let people know we really want to hear from you. If you've got a favorite musical that you want to chime in, or if you saw Mamma Mia and you had a favorite moment, we'd love to hear you call in and share that with us. And the number here in Anchorage is 550-8433, or if you're outside of Anchorage, it's 888-353-5752. And we can also take your emails if you would like to just send in your question or comment. We often share those on the air, or we can even pose a question to the guests from you. That's hometownalaska@kska.org. I also want to let you know that we put a bunch of fun links on the KSKA website. Some of the history of these two musicals, the Facebook fan page for Mamma Mia, which is pretty fun to read. We even put the flash mob from the opening night of Mamma Mia, which is really fun to see Anchorage out there in Town Square rocking it out. It was a pretty fun idea. And if you haven't seen it yet, I'd recommend you go to kska.org and catch it. But we're also going to talk about some sort of serious things, like when is it opera and when is it musical theater?
We
put up a link there because that's the topic being discussed. So at any rate, welcome. We welcome our listeners. We welcome our guests. And I said we were going to start out with a kind of a general question about why do we fall in love with musicals? Why do we hum the songs in the shower, in the car? You know, what is it about them? What do you guys think? You both have lots of exposure.
Well, for me, I mean, I grew up, as you said, in Omaha, Nebraska, and my first exposure to musicals was my parents' old records, the Rodgers and Hammerstein, all that, the old great ones, you know. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I think part of the charm is that it really just takes you to a different world, you know. I think that's what any art form does, you know. It takes you to a place where, you know, it's not just your everyday life and everything's not the same, and it's sort of, there's something magical about it. And,
right.
You know, and generally,
right.
I think the thing with good musical theater is that the stories, you know, everybody loves a good story, regardless of
yes.
whether it's set to music or not, you know,
yes.
and
yeah.
I think that's part of the charm of it, just, you know, being transported to a different place. And
yeah, I read a fun review. The reviews of Mamma Mia, you'll have these serious theater critics saying, okay, you know, it was fine, but they have to admit in the end that the audience loved it, even if they didn't
right.
particularly like it.
Right.
And I'm searching because there was really fun review that I found where the guy called it, like many people, billions it seems, I've always had a soft spot for the songs of the Swedish group ABBA, even though they're sort of like Supremes numbers if the composer and lyricist were lobotomized and the singers learned English phonetically. I know. They're hits because it takes too much effort to get them out of your head. No, that's unfair. At their best in Take a Chance on Me and Dancing Queen, they're ecstatically mindless, transcendental pop. Even though he's backing into it, sort of like
that's sort of a backhanded compliment,
but I think it is transcendental, you know, in some ways.
You know,
it's just,
I think,
transporting.
You're right. People don't realize, and I didn't realize this until I joined the cast, how difficult the music actually is. I mean, they were sort of pioneers with a lot of layering and, you know, a lot of electronic music.
Right.
So it's if you analyze it as, you know, as a musician, it's very difficult. Some of the harmonies are very tight and very sort of not expected. So, and what's great about our show is that it's part of the agreement with the ABBA people in creating the show was that the arrangements and everything stay exactly the same. They've changed a couple lyrics just to make them fit better into the story, but the arrangements are exactly what you would have heard. And so that's because that's what ABBA is. That's their sound.
Consistency.
You know? So they have recreated it, and I think that's.
It seems to work with the audience.
Huge part what to our success. Yes,
they don't
absolutely.
Want to see a cover of a song that they heard right. ABBA do done differently right. than right. they would have done it.
Right.
Yeah. That's pretty interesting. So that might be one of the reasons the audiences are so responsive.
Yeah, I mean, like I was saying before we started broadcasting, it was people just sit there and wait for their favorite song to come, and then when it comes, it's like, I've been waiting for this all night.
My
you
song.
Know, it's my
yeah.
song. And
yeah.
I think a lot of people, regardless of their age, I mean, because ABBA songs still play now all the time, you know.
Yeah.
Trust me, you hear them all the time.
It's like it's you amazing. Never don't hear
you
them.
You never don't hear them. And so regardless of your age, you have some sort of memory attached to a lot of these different songs, you know. And so it takes people back to any particularly happy point in their life, and it's
right.
just great, you know.
I was in the audience on Friday. I wanted to go see it. I like to go to see theater, musical theater. When we go to New York, one of the big reasons we go is to take in a couple of big shows, and then we're avid theater goers here. And I was very curious to see what the audience was like. It was a Friday night, and I told you they were noisy. It was like people yeah. rushed in from work, and they were still yeah. talking. I was thinking, gosh, I hope they'll settle down. But what I really noticed was women, there were a lot of women in the audience, and they were really into this. They were older women. It's something of an older yeah. woman's story, a single mom. There's a demographic that
right.
can really relate to that. And of course, it offers up a happy ending.
Right.
I don't
right.
think I'm spoiling anything for people.
If you don't know the story of Mamma Mia by now, you've been living under a rock.
Yeah.
So,
I was thinking that another reason Mamma Mia is so popular is the way it is all over the world all the time.
Absolutely.
There's yeah. I put the link to the Mamma Mia Facebook fan page on our site, and you can just see it opening around the world.
Yeah.
So they just post, it's opening tomorrow in Denmark, it's the
yeah,
Paris,
it's,
you know, Japan. And then, of course, people are going to it and commenting on it. So it's almost like it was strategically enveloped the world.
Well, it's sort of, I think, you know, like any sort of pop culture thing, it just sort of spreads and spreads. But that, you know, also speaks to its validity as a piece. I mean, it's something bad wouldn't have done that, you know. Like there's plenty of bad shows that have died.
Don't
absolutely.
And it's
catch,
you know, like our choreographer who we just worked with mounting this production. She's in Brazil right now doing the Brazilian
wow.
version. So it's you know, and they go to these different places and they do them in different languages, and sometimes they sing them in English and do the dialogue in the native language, and it's interesting as a cast member to like see clips from other places or see pictures, and you're like, oh, interesting. Like, you know, like an all Asian cast
yes.
or an all,
right.
you know, black cast.
Right.
Or
yeah.
It's fascinating.
That's one of those things that could unite us all.
Yeah, and really, that's the story is sort of like just,
it's a universal story.
It is yeah. universal story.
And the music is universal. I always thought the music of ABBA was universal. I thought whoever is producing these folks really has a worldwide grasp. This music appeals to everybody, regardless of where they come from, what their culture
it's
is.
It's going to catch.
Yeah, I thought, this is crazy.
I know. When I was reading about the history of the guys Anderson and Bjorn Elvis,
Benny
it
and Bjorn, yeah,
yeah. they decided that their songs would all be in English because that seems like a universal language,
right.
And that many people at least have working knowledge of. But then it's interesting to think about the stitching of the story in different languages,
right.
that and then just shifting into English
yeah,
around the world
it's,
for the songs.
Well, sir, I don't speak any other languages, so hearing in a different language.
So you'll
is
be only touring in North America.
Yes. Yes. And if we go anywhere else, we're doing it in English.
Yeah. Well, I want to remind folks, we want to hear from you. If you saw the show, tell us what you thought of it. If you haven't seen this show, but you have a favorite musical, we'd love to hear what it was and what you loved about it. Did you see it here in Anchorage? Did you see it in New York? Our number is 550-8433 or 888-353-5752, or we welcome your emails to hometownalaska@ksk.org. And I forgot at the opening to just let folks know this will be rebroadcast on KSK at 7 tonight. So if you can't call in and ask your questions. I was telling John Michael that I have a quiz because I want to see if how popular is ABBA? So I'm just going to throw a question out. You guys don't have to answer. We'll just see if anybody calls in and tells us. But here's a question for our listening audience, and it's an easy one. What song do the Donna and the Dynamos perform in costume during the wedding party? Do you guys know?
Ooh.
Is it not? You know.
I know.
We're not gonna make you say. So let me know if anybody out there knows the answer. So because we've got a cast member, I want to talk a little bit about what it's like to go to be with your stage family for, I don't know, how long you've been touring?
Well, I have been touring with this show for I just hit my 1 year mark in September. So
that's
a year.
7 days a week?
8 days a week.
8 days a week.
Yeah, it's full time. I mean, we're pretty much around each other all the time. We just went through a cast change in August. They did a little bit of reorganizing and a little bit of scaling back of a couple different things. And in doing that, we had pretty much an entire cast change up. We have a cast of 30, and there are 4 of us that remained from the last cast.
Are you happy about that? Are you looking forward to a break?
Oh, no. I love all my cast.
Yes, of course you do.
Of course I do.
Yes, you do.
Every person.
Yes.
It was great because people had the option to stay or not, and a lot of people had been with the show for a long time, and they just made decisions to either stay or leave. But what I love about this new cast is that it's so nice to be in a group of all new people. Most of the people are new to the show. They haven't done other productions before.
Excited.
They're excited to be doing it. And it's funny because we had our tech rehearsals in Duluth, Minnesota. Mm-hmm. And we had, we just teched there, and then we had one performance at the end of that week. And that performance was like a rock concert. For whatever reason, Duluth loved the show. They just loved it. And afterwards, cast members who had not done the show were like, is it like this every night, And
I'm a rock star.
Kind of it is, I mean, people, regardless of what happens in the entire show, that last 12 minutes of the show, people just kind of go crazy.
Yeah,
and they
you feel
love
summoned.
It, you know?
Speaking from the audience, I felt summoned.
High
it was
energy.
Like,
yeah, I mean,
it's time.
And it's just what you sort of everyone waits for, like they love the show, but then they're like, oh, here comes that part at the end that I love, So it's good.
So is it a good way to make money for you? Is it a lucrative?
Oh, absolutely, absolutely.
It's a good living.
Well, more importantly than the money is the steady work, as we all know, the economy being what it is. And as an artist, it seems that the arts are the first funds that get cut in any sort of, recession or anything like that. So, that's one of the reasons I stayed after being here for a year. I was like, you know what? I like working. That's really what it is. Yeah. And so much of our job as an actor is, I call it the hustle. It's like so much of it is like being out there auditioning, going to, trying to get yourself a job that like, I just didn't want to hustle. I was like, I can either stay here for another year. And it's lucrative. I mean, it's not like I'm not making millions of dollars, certainly,
right. but
as an artist, it's a good living. And, it's fun. I mean, and so many people don't enjoy what they do for a living. They do their job and then they have their life. And being an artist, it's so
your
much.
Your life is your job.
Your life is your job. And yeah. It's nice to be able, to pay my mortgage and still do what I love.
Another thing I wanted to talk to you about was you're from Omaha, Nebraska. Mm-hmm. You didn't grow up right in New York City. And
no,
you're not groomed
not
from
at
an
all.
Early age. And, I would expect that we've got we were talking beforehand, what a vibrant arts community we have here. We've got, a theater department at UAA. Mm-hmm. We've got lots of independent small theater companies, a lot of children's theater cultivating, bringing kids along. I think they might be curious, what's the path,
Well, for me, it really sort of, I guess, started in high school. I mean, I did, your elementary school plays, whatever. My first role, I was the cheese in The Farmer and the Dell.
I was the cheese.
I stood alone. That was what I did. In high school, we did a musical and a play every year, and I started doing those, and I just really enjoyed it. And Omaha, I think like Anchorage has a surprisingly vibrant arts. You know, there's a really large community theater there. There's lots of smaller professional theaters. And, you know, I just would go to see things like that. And then when I got into high school and started doing it, I had my professor or my drama teacher or whatever was, he had been an actor. And so he was very supportive. And, you know, I honestly didn't make some of the choices I made. I was like, because like it's like as far as like college is concerned, I picked my college because I liked the poster that they sent to my high school. I know that sounds ridiculous.
Listen to that college recruiter.
Right. Yeah. Spend money on marketing.
Right.
But I was fortunate enough to end up at a school that had a small theater program, but a really excellent faculty. And just I think more than anything, the best part about or the most important thing to relay, if you're a young person trying to get into this field, is just do it. Be a part of any production you can have, you know, like go see stuff if you can, you know. And I think it's a good, really an important message to for parents to support that. I mean, you know, certainly if you know, parents like, oh, you got to have something to fall back on, you know, I mean, you can make a living in the arts.
Yeah.
Chances of being a millionaire, not so great. But, you know, if you really want to do it, it's about what's in your heart and about what you need.
Yes.
Feed your soul sounds really stupid, but that's what it is. If you're a person in the arts and you understand, you know what that is, you know what that takes, and I just always tell people, you just do it. You just have to do it. And it's hard. Don't get me wrong. This job has been a huge, huge blessing to me. I struggled for many, many, many years. But you know, that's the thing with our world is that, you know, I can have a job, I can be making no money for months, and then I'll get a commercial job, say, and make $30,000 in a day. You know, mm-hmm. like that. It's
out of whack.
Yeah, I mean, and it comes out of nowhere. It's just like winning the lottery. I mean, so much of what we do is so erratic financially, and you have to learn how to pace yourself with that. You know, like if I make a lot of money, I have to like, that may have to last me 2 years. You know, like so.
Right. I want to remind our listeners what we're talking about. They might be thinking we're talking about the lottery,
but
we're actually talking about musical theater because we happen to have Mamma Mia in town right now. And we're going to be having South Pacific, which is a classic from 1949 Broadway, at the Anchorage Opera in April. And, you know, if anybody was in the flash mob, I'd love for you to give us a call and tell us what that was like.
That was great.
Our numbers are 550-8433. By the way, I want you to know who we're talking to. John Michael Zerline is a cast member from Mamma Mia. He is Bill Austin.
Bill Austin.
The adventurer father. And Tori Allen is the artistic director and general manager and go-to guy at Anchorage Opera and will be producing or putting on South Pacific. And actually, you can probably jump in a little bit on what we were talking about the path from, you know, the sort of town you grew up in to the big time, what that's like and what it takes. And then your decision actually towards the end of your career to get off that bandwagon and come to Anchorage.
You know, I could speak to that but to piggyback up on what you were just last speaking about. You know, there was a piece in one of the Harvard, it was either the Harvard Business Journal, the Harvard Journal some sort of business journal from Harvard.
Not an arts journal, but a business journal.
And the article was the MFA is the new MBA. And what it spoke to is that the global Fortune 500s are now looking for creative types. So that folks with maybe an undergraduate degree in musical theater, that person is more valuable than the person with an undergraduate degree in accounting, because in the future, the creativity is going to be the thing that's most important to have the cutting edge in the world. And you can Google that and find the article. It's really fascinating.
Yeah,
and it talks about
it up on our site.
It talks about, and that I think that would be very helpful to a lot of young folks who think it's either or. I think it's important to know that the future, one of the biggest assets you can have in the future is creativity. So however you can get that, an undergraduate degree in dance or an undergraduate degree in, you know, guitar playing. You can end up, running Wall Street or running a major software company.
Yeah.
Alan Greenspan, I think, spoke to this. He started off as a musician, and here's a fellow that became one of our chief economists.
Wow.
So
that is interesting, because we seem to go in waves. Everybody needs to be an MBA, and that's or everybody needs to be a lawyer or whatever. And really, what you need is this ecosystem that's got a lot.
Absolutely. Of anything that encourages you to be creative. I grew up in a household where my parents were very nervous about the whole arts thing.
Son, you'll never work a day in your life.
Yeah, no. You're not doing that stuff. So my undergraduate degree was in political science. And it was because of this reason, because of that either-or way of thinking. So I did my undergrad at UCLA in political science, and a few mentors down in Los Angeles encouraged me to go into the arts. And so then I went to Boston. And
you must have been performing then. You were.
Not really.
You've got a great voice. You've got one of those.
I was a drummer in a rock band. And I really hoped to be a rock musician, I was at UCLA trying to make myself well-rounded, so I joined the Glee Club, and I joined another chorus, and got some solos, and they said, hey, you've got a nice voice, maybe you should try this opera stuff. I thought, well, you know, my little hick town in Northern California, it was country music, I didn't know anything about opera, knew nothing about symphonic music, orchestra music, knew nothing about Broadway. I moved to Boston, and that's when it all started. And I just sort of crammed all this in my head for 4 years, and then started performing professionally, and then moved to New York City. I moved to New York City pre-Giuliani. New York City was a pretty scary place.
Yes, it was not as safe.
Let me tell you, it was so scary that I commuted twice a week from Boston because I didn't want to live in New York City. I didn't even like walking down Broadway.
Wow.
It was a scary place to be.
Yeah.
Then things started happening. I did summer stock. I never considered myself an opera singer. Whatever I could get, I would do. So I did summer stock in New Hampshire. There's a great little town, Lake Sunapee, and there's a little New London Barn Theater, New London, New Hampshire. And I did The Fantastics and The King and I. I loved it all. I just ate it up.
Yeah.
Then I go do The Messiah or The Mozart Requiem. And then some opera stuff. And
just mix it up.
I just loved it all.
Yeah.
And I did that there for about 15 years. The last few years in the business, I got on the international level. So I was 3 months in Austria, 3 months in Italy,
Well, that's the part I love.
Performing in Madrid, New Year's 1998. It was just fantastic.
Well, I hope these young folks are listening and thinking about the careers they could have.
Oh, you can. I think if you just... keep your nose to the grindstone.
Yeah.
And here's the thing, I don't know if you've noticed this, is that sometimes you're in school and you're in these shows and there's like, those are the people that are going to make it. Well, my experience has been that you never know who's going to make
it. That's absolutely true. You have no idea.
The people who were the favorites in high school or at the conservatory are not the ones in the business now doing well.
Interesting.
No.
Well, I think so much of what we do in our field is that especially like when you get to a certain point, like there's sort of like, this is sort of, everybody has the same skill set. And beyond that skill set, it's all those other things that make you work or not. It's, are you pleasant to work with? Are you motivated to find work?
Mm-hmm.
Are you easy to work with?
Absolutely.
Are you directable?
Are you open?
Talent is like...
one piece.
It's like your shoes. Like you just wear shoes every day. Like everybody's got the talent. It's everything else that you have to...
We're going to go to the phones, you guys, because
we've
got a call. Jason, welcome to Hometown Alaska.
Thank you.
And I know that we were hoping to hear from you. You're with the Anchorage Concert Association, and you're right in the middle of what must be an enormous task. So how's it going?
It's going really well. Yeah, we're having an exciting time, just loving having the Mamma Mia cast and crew here, and they're just so much fun to watch on stage, and the audiences are just roaring at the end of the night and just loving the show.
What does it take to bring somebody up here like this? Did you have to sort of sell your house to get them up here and hope to recoup it from ticket sales? Or what does it take, and how long ago did you know you were going to get them?
Let's see. Geez, to be honest, the negotiations to get this show up here go back as far as 2006 or 2007, actually, in terms of just trying to get the schedules all to align and work themselves out. because of a touring Broadway show being what it is, you know, they travel the country, and to get to Alaska, they have to spend almost a week total in round trip, and these shows are tightly scheduled because the producers want to, you know, make as much money as they can by, you know, selling tickets. And so to take off a week on either side is really difficult, and so that's a big challenge, just getting groups to agree to come up here and what they call lay off for a period of time in order to make that happen.
Well, John Michael was telling us they came from Canada.
We did.
Were you in Vancouver?
No, we were in Calgary and Regina and Edmonton.
So you were close, relatively.
Close. 3,000 miles is close. Like, you know, I don't. Yeah. I mean, it's. It took our set, because we got here on a Monday, and it took our set, I think, a couple more days to get here.
Yeah.
So.
Now, Jason, I know that there was some benefit for some high school students. There was some master class or something that happened. What was that?
Yeah, a group of the cast went to one of the high schools. I think it was West High School, and you know, talked with those students. You know, told them about acting and what
you
that
weren't part
like.
Of that.
No.
Were you? No. Okay. Uh huh. So the cast got here before you opened, obviously, but they were here for a couple days, and that's one of the things they did.
Yeah, and we try to take as you know, take advantage of that as much as possible. It's not often that you can get you know very strong, very talented actors, you know, into our community. I mean, right now we're having a glut of it with, you know, the Mamma Mia cast and then the Wales cast. You know, to give the kids the access to this kind of talent is amazing, and they just really get a kick out of it. We did it with Chicago, and some of the Chicago dancers went in and taught them some choreography. So it's something that we love to do, and talking to the actors and actresses afterwards, they just really loved the experience too, of connecting with the kids and saying, gosh, I wish I would have had this kind of opportunity when
that's
I was a
fun.
Kid.
Yeah, we do that in a lot of the towns that we go to, and it's really, I think, because we have a sort of a sign-up sheet for whoever wants to do it, and it's a lot of people really enjoy it. And it's fun to see, you know, just in these very, sometimes very small towns, like how much interest there is in that.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
how fresh it is to mingle with them. Jason, I have a question for you. I threw out a quiz to our listeners, and I haven't had anybody take us up on it, so I'm going to ask you the question, see how you do. Are you ready?
Yeah.
Okay, and if you don't know the answer to this one, I'll give you another one. What song do the Donna and the Dynamos perform in costume during the wedding party?
Super Trooper.
Yay,
you got it. All right. We're sure you're Jason Hodges now.
I hate to admit it, but I've seen the show four times.
Four times just in Anchorage?
Yeah.
That's great. What kind of feedback are you getting on the show? I mean, obviously people are, you're doing well with your houses. I think Jason Gren told me you expect about 19,000 people to see the show before it leaves town. Is it pretty steady for you?
Yeah, it is. You know, the midweek shows, you know, this is a secret for people who want really, really good seats. You know, typically our midweek shows are the ones that sell, you know, less tickets. And so there's always great seats, like, you know, on a Monday, Tuesday, or Wednesday performance.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, the weekend shows are huge right now. And so the feedback that we're getting is tremendous. People are just walking out of the show just loving it. You know, they just like to see a cast on stage having a good time, and that's one of the things I enjoy so much about this cast, is just that they're having so much fun on stage. And that translates to the audience, and then the audience has a good time. But then when you throw the music of ABBA in on this thing, and you know, you have to be a dark-hearted person not to love the music.
Well, John Michael said you have to be careful not to blow them away, because it's the kind of show that you could push too far, you know, so it definitely has a lot of power.
Yeah.
I want to share with you, since you're on the line, Jason, we got an email from a listener, Pat Anderson, and she's commenting. She says, I saw Mamma Mia last night, and my friend and I both agree that the positive energy from the actors on stage spilled over into the audience. We enjoyed it so much and loved the encores. I suspect she was dancing in the aisles. Thanks,
right.
Pat.
That's great.
Appreciate that. So, well, great, Jason. I imagine you're not getting a lot of sleep right now, and much like John Michael's not getting a lot of sleep right now, but we're excited to have the show in our town, and thanks for the hard work on that.
Well, thank you. And there's I'm sleeping pretty good. I have a crew of people on my staff, and then, of course, the people at the Performing Arts Center are the real heroes who are, you know, helping to keep this thing alive. You know, everybody from our tech director, Lauren, to our marketing director, Jason, everybody's just doing such a tremendous job.
Jobs for everyone.
Yeah.
That's what we like.
That's great.
Yeah, that's great. Thanks a lot, Jason.
Thank you.
All right. Well, you take care, and thanks for calling in.
Bye.
Bye-bye now. I just want to remind folks that we're on the air with Tori Allen from Anchorage Opera and John Michael Zerlein, a cast member from Mamma Mia. And we're talking musical theater. And we're you know, going to dive back in a moment, but we're going to take a little break. This is Kathleen McCoy, and you're listening to Hometown Alaska.
I'm Pat Yak, and I am the Vice President for News and Public Media here at KSKA. And right now, we are inviting you to call 550-8484 and pledge your financial support to keep KSKA's local news and information programs going strong on FM 91.1. The toll-free number is 800-478-5256, or you can pledge online at kska.org/support. 91.1 FM is where to tune for local, statewide, and national news and information. Each week, KSKA's locally produced call-in programs, Line 1, Your Health Connection, Talk of Alaska, and our new program about people, places, and ideas, Hometown Alaska, invite you to call in and join the conversation. Our hosts, Dr. Thad Woodard, Ellen Lockyer, Charles Wolforth, Kathleen McCoy, and Steve Heimel, keep you connected to your community with experts and guests that offer insight and information on the issues that matter to you. So call in with your pledge of support, 550-8484 or 800-478-5256. Online, kska.org/support. KSKA, the Alaska Public Radio Network, NPR, and the BBC all work together to provide the quality news service you deserve. Life is better with you and KSKA. In Anchorage, call 550-8484. Toll-free 1-800-478-5256 or online at kska.org/support.
Well, welcome back to Hometown Alaska. Yeah, you guys are great. I'm really enjoying the conversation. It's really, it's a treat to actually meet a cast member. We're talking musical theater. We have a Mamma Mia cast member with us. He was Bill Austin on the stage. His name in real life is John Michael Zerlein. And we're with Tori Allen also, who also has a career as a performer before he became an artistic director and general manager of the Anchorage Opera. So they've both been talking a little bit about growing up and growing into theater. So I thought, let's see, we haven't touched too much on the actual themes in these two pieces. Maybe we could talk a little bit about them. You know, we did talk a little bit about Mamma Mia being something of a woman's empowerment, sort of tells the story of a single mom doing it herself, running a taverna in Greece. And in the case of South Pacific, there's tension around Nellie and her romance with the French plantation owner when she realizes he has children of color.
Right.
And there's another theme in there of the fellow who falls in love, the pilot falls in love with the young island.
With Liat.
Yes, yeah. Liat. And his concern about whether he could actually do this or not.
Right.
And, you know, I read lots of reviews about this, and the Rodgers and Hammerstein and the creators of the show were really very liberal in their outlook. They wanted to throw these ideas out there. And it's amazing how contemporary these themes remain.
Absolutely.
We have, you know, many single parents, many, you know, lots of volatility in families these days. And here's a story that's only maybe 10 years old, I think, 1999.
Yeah,
99,
yeah.
But South Pacific is from 1949.
1949.
One of the interesting things, actually, I want to throw out our phone number here because I just would love to hear from people who've seen the show and want to tell us what their favorite song is or if they want to answer our quiz. Well, actually, Jason did a good job in answering our quiz. The number is 550-8433. Or you can call 888-353-5752 or send us an email to hometownalaska@kska.org. We talked about how Anchorage is such a vibrant arts community. If we've got arts directors out there that have a talented kid that you want to ask these guys some advice on what's the best thing you can say to your young charges, or if you yourself are dreaming of going to New York and want to know how to do it, these guys would be great to talk to. Or if you want to ask questions about these two productions, we're not bringing South Pacific, we're doing South Pacific.
We're producing it.
So we talked a little bit in advance about this. We are going to bring in some singers, so
right.
Why don't you run us through that?
Well, we're designing, manufacturing, and producing this production of South Pacific here in Anchorage. We're going to stick pretty much close to the original concepts of Rodgers and Hammerstein. We're not going to venture too far from that. Sometimes when we produce a show, we put it in a different setting. For instance, we're doing La Boheme in the winter. People might know La Boheme by its modern version, Rent.
Yes.
And instead of, our setting for La Boheme is going to be post-World War II France. So it's this decay, and, you know, we're going to do some guerrilla marketing with the speeches from the U.S. colonels about what it's like, what Paris is like after World War II, after the Germans have left. But in this production, it's exactly the way it was originally produced. We've done some typecasting. We have the lead principals, three of them, coming in from out of the town. The French plantation owner is going to be a lyric operatic bass, beautiful voice that crosses over. He can sing both musical theater and opera. As a matter of fact, he was the lead, he was the first pick for the national tour of South Pacific. And his name is Bojan Knisevic. Beautiful, handsome guy, big guy with a deep, burly voice. The women are just going to fall for him. They're going to love this guy. When he sings, "This nearly was mine," they're going to go crazy. And Arnelli,
audience.
I mean, they're just, "Or some enchanted evening." Going to be an incredible experience. Nellie Forbush is a lovely woman, Amanda Kreider, who also crosses over. She does opera, does musical theater. She's performed this role before. She did it with Opera Boston. And she's perfect character for this show. Then we have a strong tenor voice from the Midwest, Benjamin Robinson, actually. Fabulous voice. It's directed by Shane Mitchell, one of Alaska's
great DBA
artists, directors, theater types. Lauren Miller is our production manager. We're rounding out the cast with other great Alaskan talent. We have superb talent in Alaska. One of the things that shocked me the most about coming here, I have to confess, when I first came, I thought, I'm going to run this opera company kind of off the charts in this little town, because Anchorage in Alaska doesn't really market to the world that it has this vibrant arts community. What they say, we got this great outdoors, this
come
big wildlife,
mountains.
The mountains.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But the artistic talent, the theater, the culture here is just as grand as the mountains. And, you know, if we didn't have the mountains, we could market what's going on here to the world and still draw tourists.
Mm-hmm.
And that's one of the things that shocks me, that we don't really market that to the world.
Yeah, and I was stunned to find out the opera's been around for 49
years. Unbelievable.
Yeah. So you're going to have a 50th, just like the state. You started 1 year after the state.
Can you imagine? They started an opera company up here.
Yeah, these are
were
some
crazy?
Hardcore arts lovers. Yeah.
I know.
Yeah. Well, there's a great story, actually, that dates back to the early days. I'm not sure it was the opera that put on South Pacific.
It wasn't the opera. It was
in 1951.
The original South Pacific premiered in 1949 in New Haven, Connecticut at the Schubert Theater. One of the fellows in the cast, I believe, was very soon after recruited into the military. He was stationed on Kodiak, I believe.
Kodiak
he
Island.
He got with a group of people and petitioned to do an off-Broadway production on Kodiak in Alaska shortly after it was premiered. And they granted the permission because Alaska was considered so far off the map that it wouldn't interfere with their marketing
plans. No one will notice.
Yeah. No, they could do it up there. Well, it was a huge hit. The production moved down to Anchorage. Six performances sold out, and then moved back to Kodiak. South Pacific has a very unique, that show has a very unique history in the state of Alaska involving the military, this vibrant little theater community. I think it's going to be
pretty interesting. Yeah.
Oh, it's very interesting. We still have the original cast list.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then some of those folks are still around. Jean Powell.
Right. I talked
Pons.
With Jean. Yeah, we may hear from Jean today. She told me she was the prop mistress in 1951, and she told a story of, you know, they were serving champagne in the estate on the show,
right.
And the main actor rushed off the stage into the champagne display that they were about to carry, and there was this huge crash. But anyway, she said the show went on. They just kind of grabbed a few glasses and went on with the show. But she vividly remembers putting it on here.
Oh, yeah. Can you imagine how hearty those people were? Just a year, within 16 months of the original Broadway production. They're producing it in Alaska.
Yeah, that's really amazing.
That doesn't happen these days. I don't think.
No.
Well, legally it doesn't happen usually,
no.
Right? I mean, it's hard to. I mean, they want to really get a good run in New York.
That's like with Mamma Mia. The rights haven't been released. I mean, if there's a production of Mamma Mia, it's the original production. So a lot of shows, once they've sort of done their commercial runs, then their rights are released to community groups or to high schools or, you know. And then it has a whole different life and can become something completely different.
So that's not happening with Mamma Mia.
Not anytime soon, I don't think.
Yeah,
I mean, it's, you know, like we said, going like gangbusters all over the world. So.
Let me remind our audience, we're talking musical theater here. We can talk a few other shows if people want to talk other shows. But we happen to want to celebrate Mamma Mia being in town and the coming of South Pacific in April with the opera. Give us a call at 550-8433 or send us an email to hometownalaska@kska.org. We have with us John Michael Zerline, who's Bill Austin. You know, you're the most Alaskan character in the...
I know, right?
You're like the adventure guy with the, you know, the hat and all that kind of stuff. So maybe the guys are... actually riffing off you.
Yeah, that's what you mean.
And Tori Allen, who's the artistic director and general manager, and had a long career in musical theater and opera around the world before he came. We're lucky to have you, Tori. Thanks for coming to
England. Well, I feel lucky to be here.
Yeah.
John can probably tell you. I mean, Alaska's a beautiful place.
The cast has been having a great time.
Have you seen
here.
Anything but the inside of your hotel?
I saw a moose.
Yay! Yeah. Some people don't get to see it.
Well, we got here. We had like 3 days off, which is unheard of. So
we were all crazy.
You know, people were flying to glaciers and going camping, and but a few of us went down to, I guess, the Girdwood area and did some hiking down there.
It's
and
pretty.
The woman who plays Tanya in the show. She was like, I just want to see a moose today. I just want to see a moose today.
Yeah.
So we're driving, and we come around this corner, and she was driving. She's like, moose, moose. And there was this moose sort of right in front. So we quick pulled over and took a picture. And
we're so proud.
That's
great.
It was amazing. You know, and I mean, I've been, I haven't been to this part of Alaska. I've been down to like Juneau and Ketchikan, those sorts of things. But it's beautiful up here, just amazing. And
it is gorgeous.
The cast is definitely taking advantage. In fact, there's a group of them today that went on like a 20-mile bike ride.
Wow.
Somewhere.
Where'd they go?
I have no idea.
Hope they come back.
They're the ones who will be limping tonight during the show, probably.
You guys are vigorous. You can put on that show after a 20-mile bike ride.
Well, you know, the thing about what we do is what's so great about going to all these towns across, you know, places you would never go to, generally, you know. And you get to see, and so we get to see a lot of just stuff you would never see, you know. Like last year on the tour, we went to Rapid City, South Dakota. So a lot of people got to go. We got to go to Mount Rushmore, and people had never seen that.
That's cool.
You know, so it's like we try really hard to enjoy the cities that we're in, and take, you know, check in local restaurants and whatever adventure sort
of
things.
Do you get to meet local people, or do you just sort of have to work all the time?
I mean, no, we actually don't work that much. We have rehearsal occasionally, depending upon what's going on in the show, if there's replacements coming in or if there's, you know, changes happening. But, you know, generally, once the show is up and running, we just have our show at night. So I get to the theater at like 7 and then, you know, by...
You said you sing about half a song.
Well,
So what's your big challenge in this?
My big challenge... Well, it's interesting. For a good chunk of last year, I was not playing the character I'm playing. I was in the ensemble, and I was the priest in the wedding.
Right.
And I understudied all three dads. So I've actually played all three dads, which is...
you have been the father
I have
of
been, yes,
Sophie.
I have been. But my job was... The ensemble in this cast, I will say, works... so much harder than the principals.
They pump it out.
The principals probably won't like me saying that.
No, but it's true.
It's
true.
You've got some heavy tracks.
I love the when they're dancing in the flipper.
The flipper, yeah. Oh, I mean, the ensemble works so hard, and so many of them, aside from doing their own tracks, you know, they're covering their principals as well. So, you know, it's a hardworking cast just across the board. And yeah. It's great. But like when I was in the ensemble, I was singing 16 songs every night, you know, singing backup. Because
wow.
People don't realize that everything you hear is sung live.
Well, that was one of my questions, because I read a criticism, not of this production, but somebody was cranky about, you know, electrified voices or something.
You know what? Part of the ABBA sound is that sort of electric sound.
Mm-hmm.
But we're all singing live. There's 30 people there every night singing all of those songs. And a lot of, you know, there's a lot of effects and stuff placed on the voice with microphones and stuff. So a lot of people think it's recorded, but it's not. There's people singing.
You know, I
every
had
night.
My binoculars because
Oh, you're
I
that lady.
Really, yeah, I was that lady. And I saw the little microphone, right?
Oh, yeah.
I was going to say, how are they doing it? Where is that? I couldn't see it anywhere. And then I saw a little flash of light and I thought, that's. And then I could find it on other.
Yeah, it's tiny. It's all right up in our hair and goes down. We have our backpacks on our back, you know.
Yeah. That's amazing.
But yeah, it's a lot of work, this show.
Yeah, I'm sure. I wanted to tell folks the story about, because we talked a little bit about serious drama people really, you know, sort of quibbling over Mamma Mia. And the actress Meryl Streep ends up being in the movie. And I read the story about how she got that role. It was post 9/11. She took her family to the musical in New York because it was such a dark time and she wanted to see if she could do something for her family. And they were so happy after the production and feeling much better. And she wrote the cast a thank you letter to say, you helped my family, you know. And one thing led to another and she ended up taking the role. Because some critics have said, why is the queen of drama taking on this role, and that was a bit of a backstory that came out in a feature story.
You know, it's interesting. The movie, while it is very similar to the play, it's the casting of the movie was a little bit different. And our cast is sort of interesting because we have. It sort of depends upon who they cast as Donna. The whole cast, as far as the principals are concerned, sort of revolves around the casting of Donna. The Donna we have now is she's a very different type than they normally have. She has
most
really short hair.
Yeah.
She's actually Australian. I don't know if you knew that about her, but she's doing an American accent. Lovely.
Uh-huh, she's doing pretty well.
Yeah, she's great. And I would say that the choice of her as Donna, she's a much sort of edgier looking Donna than everyone else. Yeah, which is great. And it's been such a different, because our last Donna, who was also great, you know, was much more traditional casting. And it's just so. That's what I love about what we do. Like you can have two people playing the exact same role, saying the exact same lines, and singing the same songs, and it is a completely different performance.
That's
know?
Really interesting.
Like the guy we have playing Harry right now, the British dad, he's hilarious, and he's like
the gay dad.
Yeah, the gay dad. That role's not always played funny, you know, and sometimes the Sam's played very staunch and serious. I think our group of dads that we have right now are very sort of happy-go-lucky sort of group of actors, and that translates to the stage. And we all get along so well.
Right.
The three dads, we have a really great camaraderie, which is wonderful. And the whole cast really is just really, it's a nice company to be a part of. They're really great.
Yeah.
That's important.
It is important.
It's been a lot of time
persuasive to young people who are thinking, God, what's it like to do that work?
Don't get me wrong. It's work. And people, I think the public in general forgets, they see what we're doing and it seems all very glamorous. And I'm not going to say there aren't parts of it that are really great, but like it's work, it's really hard work. And the things you don't think of if you have just sort of a desk job, like I have to be careful about my voice. I have to be careful about, there's things you don't think about, just your physical health. Like most people can, go sit at a computer all day if they have the flu or if they feel horrible or if, you have to be very present and very, like a couple of weeks ago, a group of us had this like pickup football game.
Uh-oh.
And I had not done anything physical like that in a long time. And so I messed up my legs. I stretched my muscles in my legs. And for about a week or so, it was really, I almost had to call out of the show because I was like, this is things you don't think about, like just your everyday life, really affect your performances. Yeah. And like we had a girl yesterday who was she cut her thumbs in her hotel room. She was like fixing the coffee pot or something, and it just like shattered, and it cut both of her thumbs, and she was out of the show last night.
Oh dear, was she in the ensemble?
Yeah, one of the ensemble, one of the Sophie covers.
Oh, and you never know what's going to happen.
You know, and then what's great is that we have, aside from the understudies in the ensemble, we have four what we call swings, which are the people who cover the ensemble. So each of them covers like seven or eight people.
You're getting tired listening.
No, the swings.
Yeah,
no,
the swings. It's a really hard job.
Because you do both. You really have to be ready for both.
Yeah, and well, and that's the thing is that you never have any idea when you get to the theater every night what role you're going to do.
Oh, God.
You know, I mean, they're doing seven different roles, and you know, so
that's incredible.
Yeah, it's great.
Yeah, I wanted to bring up with you, Tori. I found a site that was discussing when is musical theater opera, and you cringed and said, that's a touchy subject.
That's
so
really
let's talk
touchy.
About it a little bit.
Do you sure you want to go there?
Well, partly
some
because
real strong
I think,
beliefs.
You know, there's different audiences, I imagine. You have your pure opera goers who really only want to hear, I don't know, La Traviata or Turandot or something like that, do you think it's a good show for Anchorage and a good move for Anchorage?
I think so. For me, it's American opera. I've been in this business for 30 years, and I have really struggled trying to understand the difference between what we consider musical theater and what we consider opera. At the core of both forms is music, theater, instruments, dance, art, the stagecraft, the art of acting. That's it. These other constructs, these divides that we create, that people create, I think have nothing to do with the base form. But people cling on to what is opera. When we announced that we were doing South Pacific, I got we did get a little bit of hate mail.
We got some
hate mail. How dare you produce a musical?
Huh.
And I thought, well, okay. Can you help me understand the difference between this and, say, Mozart's Abduction from the Seraglio or any of that German opera where it's very basically musical theater? It's just German.
Mm-hmm.
There's no difference. If Mozart were around, he wouldn't see any difference. But somehow we think that there's a difference, and there really isn't.
Yeah. I was talking to Shane Mitchell before, and I'm not sure if we'll hear from Shane. We might. He's going to direct it for you.
Right.
I said to him, Shane, what is the difference? Or why is it that people fall in love with this so much? And he was saying it's because the music gets inside of you in a way that dialogue in a play rarely gets inside of you.
Right.
He was saying, you know, you don't go back to see Death of a Salesman twice.
Yeah.
Because it's a hard show.
It's heavy.
It's very heavy and dark and wrestling with some really tough issues. And yet a musical will just reel them in, and then they'll be singing that song, you know.
You know, I think there's something in the DNA of every human being on this planet that responds to music, regardless of wherever we are.
Mm-hmm.
And I think if you, as a composer, can just hit upon the right structure, you will appeal to anyone. And Rodgers and Hammerstein, they were among that lucky group of folks who can write those kind of songs,
amazing.
Like ABBA.
God,
they are the
ABBA of their
right.
day.
They are.
They
could
figure, somehow they were gifted with the ability to structure music in a way that appeals to everyone.
Yeah.
And then you put some good words.
Can you list some of their shows? I was just blown away. I mean, Oklahoma, Sound of Music. I mean, it just goes on and on. And they're all the ones that are right there that you've seen, you've heard. There were movies made of them. You know,
they come from that incredible that tradition in New York, where there were people in New York, there were folks at Tin Pan Alley, that tradition where there were people probably the equivalent of the nuclear scientists these days who were actually in New York City thinking about how they could create music that would appeal to a lot of people.
Mm-hmm.
It was a business, and there was a lot of time spent on how can we craft music to appeal to people. And
much the same way ABBA probably.
Absolutely.
Well, and also I think that what people don't realize, like we said, it's really a crafting. I mean, it's not just like, oh, we've made these songs and we're going to, like, it's marketing, it's, you know, plot direction. Like, there's so much that goes into creating a well-formed piece that, you know, and then there's also I'm not as familiar with opera as I am with musical theater, but, like, you know, there are, even within musical theater, there's a different echelons of, like, there's sort of hoity-toity musical theater, and then there's sort of, like, real bare-bone, you know, and so people, shows that, like, I may find brilliant and amazing aren't necessarily commercial successes, you know, and it's the same. Oh, it's like movies, you know. It's like there's really great independent films that do terribly in the box office, you know. But like so much of the arts is business. I mean,
We didn't talk about this yet, but South Pacific was based on a Michener novel, Tales of the South Pacific, and he was a lieutenant. He was stationed out there on that island, and he only sold 25,000 copies, according to my research, of his book in the beginning.
Right.
And he won eventually the Pulitzer Prize for literature, and then later eventually sold millions and millions. As the sort of idea of World War II sort of matured and people understood what was going on there. And I mean, that's just amazing. I also wanted to let people know about the awards that these shows have won. I mean, both of them have done really well.
Oh, it's, you know, I saw Mamma Mia in New York City about 4 years ago, and I have to tell you, it's one of the best musicals I've ever seen. I had such a good feeling coming out of that. In the last 5 years, I'd say the two musicals that I've seen in New York City that left me with the biggest great sort of sense of euphoria was Mamma Mia in a show called Rock of Ages. It's just like, oh yeah, it was just such a great time.
It's almost a revival, you know. Right. It's practically going to church.
It's okay if music doesn't appeal to you on an intellectual level. It's just a good spiritual sonic massage that just does something.
We all need to
you.
Sing and dance more than we do in our everyday life.
Right, and then there's times for the Shakespeare,
Did you see that revival at the Lincoln Center of the
South Pacific? Yeah, as a matter of fact, that's what's inspired.
I didn't show you this, but I saw it too, and this is their book. It's got great little essays in it.
The girl Laura Osnes, who was Danelle, I lived in Minneapolis when she was living there, and she was my Dorothy when I did Wizard of Oz. Yeah,
small world.
Yeah, it's really a small world because she was the one. She was on that Grease show that she won the part of Sandy in Grease on that. Had a great career, and that show has been that revival was so successful.
Yeah, I mean, it's really, really.
It's so
and
great.
I mean, we're at war right now, you know? I mean, there were many reasons why I think this resonates. We still have issues of race in our culture.
Oh, absolutely.
Wars. Absolutely. You know, there's just a lot of unfinished business. Another thing that I found really fun historically about this was they made scarves when this came out, little scarves, like memento scarves. This is a copy of one. And because all the silk was being used for parachutes in the war, they used rayon. And so people in the service could get those. They were lightweight. They could ship them home to their sweethearts back in the States, just a little memento. It's just fascinating the way it sort of went all over the culture.
These folks were, I mean, think about songs like You've Got to Be Carefully Taught.
Huge
message.
Which is an issue around racism. Right?
Absolutely. Exactly. For me, well-crafted art like that, or well-crafted works like that, can be more effective than any sort of legislation. That simple song has probably done more to change people or make people think about the way they think than any sort of legislation, any marches, any of that stuff. And that's the power of the arts. And I think that that's one of the special things about this show.
Absolutely.
To see those two characters that you can identify struggle with these issues and the programming they've received and what does it mean?
I'm not supposed to. This is bad. I'm not supposed to.
Oh, you have a different pigmentation. So are you an alien?
But
this is how I've been programmed. So what? You know.
Well, we're drawing to a close here, and I just want to thank you both for coming out in the middle of your run, and Tori for you taking the time.
My pleasure.
We have Mamma Mia continuing on in our town through Saturday. Mm-hmm. I'm pretty sure.
Yep.
So have you counted the number of performances you'll be delivering to go?
I don't even know.
Because you do doubles some of the time.
Yeah, it's usually an 8 show. It's been kind of strange here because we...
It's a 13 show.
Yeah, we did...
Here's our music.
Oh, my God, it's time to go. We have lots of shows. Please come see it.
Okay. Yeah. Well, listen, I really want to thank John Michael Zerlein from Mamma Mia. He was Bill Austin, one of the dads. And Tori Allen from Anchorage Opera. They'll be staging South Pacific. Thank you both for sharing stories with us
on
Hometown Alaska.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Hometown Alaska is a production of Alaska Public Telecommunications Incorporated News and Public Media. An archived copy of today's program, additional information, and links to all the websites mentioned on today's show are available online at kska.org. Send us your comments and suggestions of things you'd like to talk about at Hometown Alaska, 3877 University Drive, Anchorage, Alaska, 99508. This is KSKA Anchorage.